I'm an addict. My name is Jay.
Hello, Jay.
Hello,
Hi,
Jay.
Jay.
The individual that's going to share with us tonight, I met when I first came to these meetings. He had met my roommate before he met me, and I ran into him in this meeting. And I was out searching for virtual meetings at that point, and I crossed a website called the Highlands and Islands. And I came to the meeting, and he was there. And a couple other people were there. And I've been coming ever since. And we have become really good friends. He's been to my house a number of times. And we do service together globally. We have broken bread, which is something I can't say I've done with everybody in these rooms. And I am very happy to call him friend. And I look forward to hearing him share. And I also look forward to hearing about the anniversary he just celebrated, because he did. Steve, would you share with us?
Thank you, Jay. I'm an addict. My
Thanks,
name's
Jay.
Steve.
Hi,
Hi,
Steve.
Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Michael. And yeah, I kind of feel a bit weird about this because it was today of this week, and I'm actually 9,869 days clean today, which makes me 27 years and 1 week in recovery. And that just fills me with huge quantities of gratitude and humility and surprise and sometimes disbelief about how that happened. Because that's a hell of a lot of days. And I kind of jokingly said at the beginning of the meeting to someone, they said, just for today I am. And I've got to say, that is really my truth. That is my truth today. I managed to accumulate all those days one at a time. And sometimes it's been one day at a time, literally. I've had to do it just for today, because the reality of my life, or the reality of the state of my recovery, has felt in jeopardy and felt threatened. And what I learned very early on in this fellowship, was that when it gets like that, keep it down, keep it to the day, keep it to 5 minutes, keep it to 10 minutes, whatever it takes to not pick up, not to use that first drug. And that's kind of what I've done for all those days, and I'm not saying it's all been doom and gloom, because it really hasn't. I've had periods in my recovery where, it's felt wonderful. I've been living a life beyond my wildest dreams, and I still kind of do, pretty much. And I wish I could sit here tonight and actually share with you that how wonderful my life is today, which on some levels it is, but on some levels it isn't. I'm facing challenges in my life today that, are a result of having survived all those days. By no means an old man, but I'm by no means a young man. But I guess, I was thinking about it earlier on a little bit, and I was thinking, I've got to do another share. Everyone's heard my story, and I realised actually that there's people in the meeting tonight that don't know anything about me, or how did I get here? So I guess I'm just going to kind of briefly kind of share a little bit about that, And I'm a child of the 50s. I was born in the middle of the 1950s in Liverpool. I don't have the accent, never had. I don't think I probably had it a little bit when I was a kid, but neither of my parents were Scousers, so I didn't pick up the accent in my home, if you like. And, I never really made friends. I never really associated with people as a child, particularly. So, you know, I kind of wasn't out there with the boys, you know, kind of being the scouser, like, you know what I mean? All that stuff. But yeah, I mean, why am I here? You know, I felt like an empty space most of my life. I felt like an empty space when I was a kid. You know, and I could sort of sit here and I could share about the traumas of growing up in 1950s Liverpool and the poverty and the moving around and having kind of an absent father and all that kind of stuff. You know, and I could say that I could blame what happened later in my life on that, you know, but I'm not going to, you know, but I believe today, you know, and one thing that recovery gives us is the ability to look back on our lives and kind of be honest and thorough and fearless about who we are and what we are and where we came from, you know. So, my life was a fantasy. I never fit in, so I created a world. So I was kind of living the obsessive compulsive kind of lifestyle from a very early age. You know, and behaving in an addictive fashion, you know. I learned to lie very young. And that was protection. I learned to lie to protect myself from the threat of all kinds of different things that I thought were there. Whether they were or not, I'm not qualified to say, but that's how it felt, you know. But I just didn't fit in. I just never really fitted in. I mean, as my life went on, you know, I got ripped out of that environment, you know. And we moved to the West Country. So I think I was 11 years old. We moved to Bristol, and that didn't really help, you know, because there I was again, you know, and in this strange environment, battling to find a way to fit in, battling to find a way to actually explain myself to myself. And find a way to for you to like me, you know. That's the kind of thread of my threading a thread of my years as a using addict and as a human being. You know, this real huge desire to be liked, and I wanted to be able to fit in, and I never could. I could never find the right combination of whatever it was that would make me feel as if I was doing that, you know. So I was a kind of non-person, really, I guess, in a lot of ways. I picked up playing rugby, which was great for me because I was very angry. By the time I was 11, 12 years old, I was full of hate, full of anger, full of resentment, full of all kinds of feelings I couldn't name. And playing rugby really helped me because it actually enabled me to, well, it gave me the opportunity to take part in sanctioned violence on several occasions during the week. And that kind of felt good. It felt good to do that, you know. It felt good to be aggressive, and I was a big kid, you know, and I was good at it. But that was kind of that was never going to really last, you know, because it was just another kind of, you know, it was just another little layer of this picture that I tried to create of who I was, you know what I mean? Somehow or another. Yeah, so I'm kind of fast forwarding a little bit. I mean, I picked up pretty young. I started drinking by the time I was 12. I started smoking dope by the time I was 13, and I'd actually left home by the time I was not quite 16. I left home. Huge rows with my parents, my mother in particular. I mean, my mother and father had split up, you know. And again, I'm not going to blame my addiction on that. You know, they were human beings. They were just doing what they thought they were doing what they needed to do to survive for themselves. You know, but the fact of the matter was is that, you know, substances helped me to fill that gap, helped me to fill that empty hole inside of myself that I felt that I'd always felt. And it was a real natural fit for me. I took to it like a duck to water. At the time, I remember believing or thinking that, you know, this is it, this is me. I found what I needed to fill me up that was going to help me to get through my life. Still had no idea what the fuck I was doing. I didn't understand what I was feeling. I knew I was depressed. Looking back, I knew I was depressed. I didn't know what was going on at the time. But, you know, I was depressed and probably suicidal by the time I was 13 years old. And drugs took that away. Drugs helped me. Substances helped me to deal with that shit. My addiction progressed really quickly. By the time I left home, within a few weeks, I'd started mainlining drugs, living in the squats in Bristol, no money, bit of a ragamuffin, I guess, in a way. And we're talking like, you know, late 60s, very early 70s. You know, and that was it. You know, that kind of set the theme for the next 25 years or so for me. That was my lifestyle. I was completely and utterly dedicated to using and finding and getting more drugs. And it didn't matter what it was. I would use anything that came my way. I would use. I had drugs of choice over the years, but it was what it was. And I could regale with you all kinds of crazy stories about living in squats and all the insanity of that. But, you know, we've all been there, I guess. You know, for me, it was, you know, that progression was, looking back, you know, it was just alarming, really. I thought I was immune from the world. I thought I was living the life of a rock star, but I was actually, you know, penniless and wearing rags, living in squats with no windows. But in my head, I was a rock star. In my head, I was living this wonderful life, you know, like young hippie, you know, I bought into all of that shit, you know. Read all the great books, you know, Jack Kerouac and Ken Kesey and all those people. And my head was full of all that stuff and idealistic ideas about what I was going to do and how we were going to change the world, you know. It's complete nonsense, really. At that 25 years of my using, I look at that and I didn't do it today. I was thinking about getting out my first step one today. It's one of the OCD. I kept my first lot of step work and reread it. It was 12 pages of my life story. And I can remember it. It was all about blaming other people. It was all about blaming the society. It was all about blaming my parents. It was about blaming my ex-wives. It was about blaming the courts for sending me to jail. It was about blaming the police. It was about blaming everything. But there was never any kind of real understanding that the truth of the matter was that I was the common denominator and all of that. I mean, I did a fair bit of bird in the 80s. I spent, I think, something like less than 6 months out of jail in 5 years, during which time I'd got married and divorced and had three kids taken away from me and met another woman and started having more kids. It was like, what the fuck? You know? And all of that stuff that was going on was all secondary to my drug use. It was all secondary to my wanting and needing to find more. Because even though I had all those things, you know, and I ended up like living in nice houses. We had a house bought for us in Yorkshire, in Leeds, at one point, and then they fucking took it out from under us. It was all insane, and then we moved to the West Country again. And you know, again, you know, I kind of did a little bit of work, and I earned a deposit, and got some help. We got another house, so, and I had all that stuff. You know, I had all those things going on. You know, I was vaguely trying to work. Earning a few bob, but it was all about, you know, I kind of gave up crime as well. I stopped doing crime. I don't know why that was. I stopped being a criminal after my last sentence. It was like I'd had enough, I think, one way or another. But my story into recovery starts about 10 years before I got clean. I was on remand and I was given the opportunity to go into treatment. This had been 1982. And I had a probation officer who thought fucking tooth and nail to get me into a treatment center. And she obviously knew what I was and, you know, what my problem was. I didn't really see it. For me, it was this looked like a good option not to do a considerable more, a bit a, more jail time. And that fell through. And I had a judge turn around. I actually had the judge make the statement that they didn't believe I was a drug addict. Or I didn't have a drug problem. And what I was a career criminal. Which gave me the green light. And that was it. Okay, I don't have a problem with drugs. The judge said so. You know, I didn't need much excuse. I never needed an excuse to use. You know, if I wanted to go shopping, I had to take drugs. If I wanted to go for a shit, I had to take drugs. If I wanted sex, I had to take drugs. You know, if I wanted to go and see one of my estranged kids, I had to take drugs. Didn't matter. Whatever it was, I would take drugs. Because that was just the way it was. I didn't question it. And it was just that was always the way it was. And I would do whatever it took to actually get to a point where I was going to be able to do that somehow or another. Yeah, I mean, and the 10 years that went on between that me nearly going into treatment and me finally kind of finding recovery was just an incredibly fucking difficult downward spiral. The second marriage broke down. You know, I was just a mess. And I went to my GP. I've shared this a lot. I went to my GP. I'd convinced myself that the problem was that I didn't know how to tell the truth, and perhaps I had a problem with compulsive lying. And I went to my GP, and she said, "Fucking," she told me she didn't believe me, but she thought I might have a problem with drugs. And you know, once I'd gone, I kind of got past the outrage, and I could see that it was, you know, my life was just a fucking mess. I was out of control. I'd inherited 15 grand from an auntie, and my partner and I actually, apart from the fact I lent my father-in-law a bit of it, but we got through 10 grand in about 4 months, pretty much all on dope and drugs. Towards the end of 1991, I was just completely out of control. I was in psychosis a lot, having kind of psychotic breaks where I would wake up somewhere that I didn't know where I was. I became violent. I came to one night, thought I was swimming, and actually what I was on the floor in our dining room in the back of the house, and all the furniture was broken and smashed fucking everywhere, and my partner was sat on top of me trying to stop me from hurting myself. You know, and that wasn't the only incident like that. There was a lot more that went on a lot. So I was completely insane. I was completely off out of it. And we split up. We decided it was probably best for us and the kids if we separated, because one of us was going to get hurt. And part of this process of me seeing this GP was they put me in touch with this with the services, and I got sucked into the services through a CPN who referred me to a clinical psychologist, whose first reaction to me once he took some blood tests was, "This is insane. You shouldn't even be able to talk to me. You should be climbing the walls. I can help you. Take this prescription for drugs and come back next week, and I'll give you some more." And I wasn't going to say no to that. You know, the deal was, don't use street drugs. I mean, he knew and I knew, really. I mean, I'm sure he, well, I, he, yeah, everybody knew that wasn't going to happen, you know, but it was like free drugs. And I think the idea was to get me off the street. Didn't really work, got worse. Over the winter of 91, early part of 92, it just got worse. And I moved into this little flat, away from the house, away from home. You know, the kids would come and visit me, and I'd go and visit them. You know, and it just got worse. It carried on getting worse and worse and worse. You know, I was losing huge amounts of weight. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't kind of looking after myself. You know, the flat was disgusting. There was fucking blood stains up the walls, broken furniture. I'd actually broke all the mirrors in the house because I couldn't look at myself anymore. disconnected the doorbell, and all of that kind of stuff. I drilled a hole in the wall to the socket out in the corridor outside to connect up the electricity to it, because I couldn't afford to pay my electricity bill, all that kind of stuff. I mean, I kind of defaulted to what I was doing when I was like 16, 17 years old. I was living in a squat, and I kind of descended back to that level again. I'd become an animal, really. And I couldn't find anybody to talk to. I couldn't talk to people, but I was desperate to talk to people. And I'd see them and I'd run away, and it was just insane. But for some reason or another, this guy I was seeing, I kept going back to him, and he kept giving me more drugs. So I kind of got worse, but I kept going back, and he started kind of talking to me about the possibility of recovery, and it never occurred to me. I don't think he ever used the word recovery. It was more about him saying, listen, there might be another way. And I'd never stopped to consider it, that there might be another way. That there might be some way that I could actually live my life differently. It was not something I thought about. I'd never known anybody that had been in recovery. And where I lived back then, there was no NA. NA didn't exist in that part of the UK back then. Even though we'd been in the UK for 10 years. Someone eventually persuaded me to go into this treatment centre. Beginning of the summer of 92. And then it got complicated because apparently there was someone I knew that was living there, that was actually in the place, and they postponed me going in, and I got worse and worse and worse. I was 9 1/4 stone by then. I was sort of not sleeping for literally days, weeks on end. I was fucked. I was just a physical wreck. I'd stopped seeing the kids. I'd stopped having anything to do with my partner. I just descended even further down into the chaos. So I ended up actually going into, so they said, okay, October, we can get you in October. And that was the week before the 19th of October, which is my clean date, that I ended up in this treatment center. And I was dying. They put me on a drip, had me in the hospital wing. Detoxed me with some strange, weird antipsychotic drug because they recognised that I was going to be dangerous, which kind of helped. And I came to a few days later because they were kind of getting me out of this bed and putting me in an armchair by then. And I came to in this kind of misty kind of room, and I didn't really know what the fuck was going on. I didn't really know where I was. And all I remember was people coming out of this mist at me and either hugging me or touching me on the shoulder and telling me it would be okay, telling me to hang in there, telling me that they love me and that I'd be all right. And all I needed to do was just stick with it, that I would get through what I was going through physically. And they were right. And then, for the next 6 weeks, they basically took me to bits and rebuilt me. And then I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I was about 3 weeks clean. And I got taken to an NA meeting, and that changed my life forever. I saw something in that meeting that woke me up. I saw something in that meeting that, for the first time in my entire life, started to make sense. And I saw the light in people's eyes, and I saw the joy in their smiles, and I saw the sparkles in their eyes. And they were all talking about my life. They were all telling my story, or bits of it. They were all talking about that desperation and that isolation and that loneliness and that desperate emotional and spiritual death that we all go through before we get it. And I wanted that. I wanted that so much. The thing about getting in a little bit of recovery is we start to actually see what's possible. And there were days in those first few weeks and months of my recovery where I wish I'd never seen it. I wish I'd never seen that that little bit of light, a little bit of light of hope, because it, sometimes it just became too hard. You know, and those were the days when it was 5 minutes at a time. You know, and that sort of slowly over a period of a few weeks, months became, okay, well, I can use tomorrow. I ain't going to use today, but I'll use tomorrow. I can do what the fuck I like tomorrow, but today I'm not going to use. Because the denial in me was broken apart pretty quickly. I could see from my step one that the unmanageability and the part of my life and the power, my powerlessness over drugs was just so evident. I could see straight away that I was completely fucking mad, and that, you know, those little glimpses of sanity that I started seeing in the other people in the meetings and the people around me that I could, gave me the courage and the faith to start believing that there was a power greater than me that could actually restore me to some kind of a sanity. You know, and step three was just amazing for me. It opened up my heart to the fact that, you know, the reality was that I'd had a higher power with me all my life, because I should have been dead so many times. I did die a few times. I was OD'd once or twice. Nearly died as a kid, actually. Various things, you know, so I knew about life, I knew about what it was like to be close to death, and I knew that, you know, I began to accept the fact that there is this power greater than me in the universe. There's something in the universe that's kept me safe. It had to be. So many people I knew had died, people who were close to me over the years, and I thought that was really where I was going. You know, so I completely immersed myself in Narcotics Anonymous. That was the choice I made. I made a choice in that first meeting that I was, that this was for me. I made a commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. That first, it, as I came out of that first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, I committed myself. I'm going to do this for the rest of my life if I need to. Because I suffer from a disease from which there is no known cure. Can I ever be arrested at some point? Recovery is impossible. I wanted what I was seeing. You know, the process for me of going through step fours and fives, being thorough, being made aware of the fact that I was stealing the food out of my children's mouths. I blamed everybody in my life for everything I'd ever done. That I took no responsibility for my own actions ever. That I never stopped to think about the consequences of whatever it is I'd done. The people I'd robbed, the people I'd hurt, the people I'd hurt, you know, hurt, yeah, really, that's between me and my sponsor. You know, the longer I've been in recovery, the more honest I can get about how that, all that was, you know, the more thorough I've been able to look at it, you know. Those bits and pieces that are still being revealed to me about the way I was as a human being back then. I'm really grateful for those moments, actually. Little bit more, another little bit of the picture that will fall into place. Yeah, that's why I feel the way I feel today, because I did that, or that happened, or so-and-so happened. You know, so I kind of went home. Everyone told me, you know, at the end of the, because I ended up in this little seaside town on the south coast, for 3 and a bit months, some kind of aftercare thing. I got told off for doing too many meetings. Basically said, fuck you, I'm going to go to as many meetings as I need to go to, because this is what I want. So eventually I left there and went home. I actually left treatment on the 1st of April because it felt appropriate. But everyone told me, don't go back there, don't go back to where you live, don't go back to the place you last used, don't go, you know, don't go back to where your relationships were, all that kind of stuff. And again, it was actually, fuck you, I'm not doing that. I need to take responsibility. I'd spent all my life running away from my responsibilities. I'd learned really early on that one of the things I needed to do in recovery was take responsibility. I wasn't accountable for my addiction. I'm responsible for my recovery. And that meant going home. That meant being there for my kids. That meant being there for, in some way, from my estranged partner to try and help and support her because she was still using. And, the gods conspired. My partner decided to go into treatment. She saw a bit of what I had and wanted some of it, decided to go into treatment herself. Didn't last long. She was therapeutically discharged. But in the period between her going away and me moving into the family home to look after the kids, I lost my flat. And ended up, she's come home and it's like, well, I'm sorry, that's it now. Some years later, we're still together. I mean, my partner and I have been together for 37 years. Married for 30. We're still together. That's a fucking miracle. When I first got home, there were no meetings. It was 50 miles or something to the next nearest meeting. So we started meetings. That's been the story of my recovery. The story of my recovery, my higher powers will for me, if you like, has put me in the way of outreach. It's put me in the way of actually trying to get meetings started when there's never been any meetings. And really all that, what that did was kept me coming back, you know. And I ain't going to lie, it wasn't all about the still suffering addict. It was about me. It was about me needing meetings. It was about me needing to sit in a meeting and actually have at least an hour or an hour and a half a week where I was actually just focused on nothing else. And when I did some of the other fellowship, I ended up having to because it was a question of, well, one meeting a week wasn't enough for me. And then we started meeting up with people and then we started going out to other people's meetings and we would travel to each other's meetings and support each other and do all that kind of stuff. And I did that for 10 years. And then moved up to Scotland, lived up there for 14 years, started a little meeting in a little place called Stornoway on the Isle of Lewis. Battled away with that for a few years. A few people came. Sometimes the meeting had people in it, sometimes it didn't, but it didn't matter. You know, the fact was that I needed to honour that commitment I'd made to my recovery in that first meeting, that Narcotics Anonymous was going to be a part of my life. And that the only way I began to learn I could actually make that happen was by being in the right place at the right time with the door open and the kettle on, to be able to give it away. And if I was somewhere where there weren't any addicts kind of clamouring at the door, there weren't any meetings that were established that I could go to, I needed to start them. For me, because I can only keep what I've got by giving it away. And if there's no one to give it away to, how am I going to keep it? It's a real simple bit of logic, really. And my recovery's been an interesting journey, really. I've had periods of bad health. I've had periods of being poor, I've had periods of not being poor. Yeah, I've had periods where the still suffering addict in me is kicking my ass. The disease has been fucking rampant in my mind. I kind of left NA alone for a few years. I was still kind of in my head. I was still going to meetings in my head. I was still working a program. But really, I wasn't paying it much attention. I was just kind of sitting back on my laurels thinking I had it cracked. 16 or so years clean. And that's when I found online recovery. That's when I started. I was literally falling to bits and my partner relapsed. I was actually ill enough to lose my job and we nearly lost our home and, you know, fucking just insane. Kids had all kind of pretty much left home by then, you know, so that wasn't a consideration, but you know, it was like, well, okay, what the fuck do I do now? You know, Missy's coming home, took her little bag, her favorite little travel bag. She took her little bag out and that was it. She's gone. And she said, that's it. I'm going. I can't do this. I can't put you through this. I've got to go out and do this for myself and try and figure out her life. And I remember sitting there feeling abandoned. Because I was, actually. She'd abandoned me, bless her heart. And I started looking into things online and found addicts online that were willing to reach out and help me from across the world, which was 10 years ago. I didn't know. And I started getting involved in online meetings and started doing service, because that's what I've always known I needed to do. It was a kind of reboot for me, that not recommended. I know a lot of people in recovery that have done it, have spent time away, kind of neglecting the basics, thinking that we've got it sort of sorted out. And, like I said, we started trying to start the little meeting up now. And my meeting attendance had kind of dribbled down to maybe one meeting a year if I happened to be on the mainland. And I didn't have a home group, or I didn't have any of that kind of good stuff. So my foundation was just gone. I had to rebuild it and start all again, So I found a new sponsor and did another round of steps and started to feel better. I'm never far away from the insanity in my head, though. I went through a huge period. I went through a little bit of an issue with some service and popped a huge amount of resentment. I had to do another step 4 and 5 on that a few years later. And they talk about, the requirements to start a meeting are 2 addicts, a coffee pot and a resentment. And these meetings started 2 or 3 addicts, a coffee pot and a resentment. Because we wanted to do something differently. We wanted to feel that we actually had some kind of control over who we were and how our meetings were going to be run, and not be autonomous, There's the pesky fucking traditions get in the way. A lot of people's ideas of what Narcotics Anonymous should be, unfortunately. And that's what I've been doing for the last 10 years, really. Watching this grow, I've been truly humbled by it and utterly blessed by watching people come into these funny little online meetings that no one said would work, find recovery, keep coming back. And people like my friend here just would rock up, And it's grown and taken on a life of its own, and that's how it should be. I remember leaving the meeting that I started in the West Country after 10 years, and my heart was ripped out a little bit. It was very difficult to let that go. But I went back to that town a little while ago with one of my daughters. It's now in recovery, and there's. It was actually 26 years. 26 years, yeah. It was 26 years that meeting had been going, and there's now 3 meetings in that town, and it's really well supported. And it filled me a huge amount of kind of pride, huge sense of satisfaction, and a huge sense of humility that actually all those struggles. The first meeting in that town we ever had was under a fucking tree in a church. Couldn't find a venue. Go to any lengths to do whatever it is we have to do to carry the message, to give it away, to keep it. And that's really as simple as that, I'm not talking to another addict, I'm talking to myself. And I'm not often my best judge, or I'm always my harshest critic, but, I don't need to listen to what's going on in my head. It's a fucking nightmare. Need to leave that alone wherever possible. So yeah, who knows? I'm incredibly grateful for this fellowship. I'm incredibly grateful for everyone I've ever encountered. I'm incredibly grateful for everyone that's ever came before me. I'm grateful for the people that were in that meeting, in that first meeting I went to, which was in Salisbury, by the way, for putting that meeting on. And being willing to actually accept the fact that, people were going to come into that room that didn't have a fucking clue what they were talking about, and would probably talk a load of bullshit and have their heads up their asses. But they knew, because they'd been there too. That's where I started. That's where we all start. None of us come, well, none of us come into this fellowship knowing what the fuck we're doing. I don't believe. But somehow together, you know, we put a bunch of crazy people together in a room and we all start sharing with each other and we all walk out relatively, a little bit saner than when we went in. I mean, that's a fucking miracle. That's the miracle of these 12 steps. That's a miracle of these, it's a miracle of our 12 traditions and the spiritual principles that are built into them, you know, that show us that this works. I know NA works. I can prove it. I've got 9,869 days of being clean that told me that it works on a daily basis. As long as I don't give up, as long as I just remember the basics, don't use no matter what, you know, hand my will and my life over to a power greater than myself and pray for guidance, you know, pray for some kind of light to get turned on when I feel in the darkness. And I do sometimes feel in the dark, especially recently. I've had a really rough 12 months. I'm really not well. You know, and so I'm vulnerable. And I'm vulnerable to my feelings. And I'm vulnerable to my emotions. You know, and I, things come out of my neck sometimes that I wish they didn't. You know, so, you know, the program is there to help me get through that shit. You know. I can make amends. I can do an inventory on a daily basis if I need to, or an inventory instantaneously if I need to. If I fuck up, oh, sorry, didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean to do that. And hope that it sort of, you know, I hope and pray that I get the same kind of forgiveness from others that I've learned to give myself. I have no regrets for my life at all. What I did was what I did. I can't change it. Can't wave a fucking magic wand and have it all go away. You know, the people in my life did the things that they felt they needed to do because that's what they thought was best. You know, and the battle continues, you know, sometimes, you know, the journey continues constantly. You know, I'm dealing with stuff with my own family right now, which some of it is complicated and some of it is difficult. Some of it is joyous. You know, it's all about, it's for me, it's been about that bridge to being a human being again. And I can be a human being today, you know, that means I'm going to hurt some days. That means I'm going to be happy some days. It means I'm going to feel like crying some days. It means I feel like hiding in a fucking corner some days. It means I want to shout my recovery from the treetops some days. And it's all things. NA made me one promise. And that is, if I worked the program, I could be relieved from the desire to use drugs on a daily basis and find a new way to live. And that's what he's given me, and that's what I found. So I'm just incredibly grateful for all of you guys, the people in my life who've helped and supported me get through that, through the tough stuff. You know, I'm grateful for the people that have been around me when I've been able to celebrate the good stuff with them, you know. And I'm sometimes embarrassed by my recovery. It's like, well, man, that's self-worth shit. That's like, well, do I deserve it? And I should, the fucking simple question, the simple answer to that is yes, I do. So I've worked hard to get what I've got, to be where I'm at. You know, I've done the work. You know, I've fought my battles. I've let go of the ones I needed to let go of. I've kind of found a way through all of my life up to in the last 27 plus years now to stay clean. And as long as I do that, I've got a chance. You know, because I know that, well, no matter what I'm feeling right now, that'll change. You know, that'll get better. I know it will, because that's the evidence that I've got. So thank you for listening to me. If you're new and struggling, please just hang in there till it, let it work. Because this program works if we let it. We just need to find the courage to let it and let go and step outside of ourselves long enough to allow that loving power into our lives. So thank you, guys. And back to you, Jay. Thank you for letting me share.